Okay, so it is Thursday, May 3rd. This is Jason Mirko, and we're doing the second interview with Christine Lan for the UW-Madison Oral History Program, in particular the Capitol Protest Series. And this interview is taking place in the math department at UW-Madison. Okay, yeah, so let's start out with the night you slept at the Capitol. And tell me about that.
So it was only one night, and it was one night where, I had every single night prior to that, I'd sort of been there until 1 or 2 a.m. I just never sort of made the effort to kind of bring all my stuff over there and then, like, actually camp out. But this was sort of, I think it was about a week and a half after we've already sort of staked out the Capitol. Like, people were already there, already settled in. And at this point, they had already started to move people from, like, the third and fourth floor, limiting them down to just the first and second floors. And so we knew it was imminent that we were going to get kicked out soon. And so I made it a point to stay that night. I think because of it, I was not there. I kind of left around 1 or 2 p.m., whereas usually I'm there so much later, and then went home, gathered some stuff, and then had some food, and then showed up again at around, I was either 6 or 8. There was a certain point when they wouldn't let any more people in either. Hmm. Like, after a certain hour, they wouldn't let any more people in. So we made sure we got in before that hour, and then they sort of closed everything down. And it was, I think it was that, I want to say that, no, I don't think so. I want to say, like, maybe that was a night where one of the other unions had also made it a point to stay over, either the Madison Police Union or possibly the Firefighters Union, but I'm not absolutely sure of that. Or maybe one of the Teamsters Union. That one I can't be sure. I can't be sure it was that night or the night before. It was one of those. But at this point, like, sort of when I showed up at the Capitol, it was always, I kind of go in, and then I would either head straight for 300 Northeast, or I would, oftentimes I'd make it into the Capitol, just sort of be rallying outside. So, because inside, just, there was always a lot going on. So this was the first time in a couple days in which I had actually spent time, like, sort of in the rotunda itself. And I remember walking in, just being amazed at how many signs had gone up in a matter of, like, 3 or 4 days. Like, it was really, really quick, like, because I was there just a week before, and you know, there were some signs, but it wasn't to the level that it was at that night. Like, it was just tremendous. Like, the whole Capitol definitely felt very transformed. And I remember in particular, sort of, like, I showed up, and then we kind of found a spot that we settled down on, which was not too difficult, but it was a little bit difficult. It was a little bit like, okay, this is sort of right by where these two hallways intersect, and it's not really the best spot to be in, but, you know, it's a spot. And there were plenty of, like, they would have signs for outlets, and they would have signs for here are the restrooms. And I don't remember, I think the internet was still working at that point, so we were all able to still use the internet. So we kind of just hung out, but after a while, every once in a while, we'd sort of get up and walk around just to sort of explore. And even though they weren't letting anybody stay on the third and fourth floor, I think at that point you could still walk up there. And I remember at one point when, I think it was after midnight, when things sort of started to settle down a little bit, people were going to bed, walking by the governor's office and just seeing that his walls just plastered with signs. And they weren't, like, sort of like everywhere else in the rotunda, they were sort of had signs that were like homemade signs of varying quality and like varying like sort of things and colors. But outside of like the governor's office, the signs were just like loose leaf paper like this and with things printed on there. And it was just like printed statements of people with letters or like addressed to the governor. And it was just, entire wall was covered like that. It felt very solemn and somber, and because also nobody was allowed to stay around the Capitol, so everyone else was a lot of things going on, drum circles and stuff, but right outside the governor's office, it was just very peaceful and very quiet. And like that sort of stuck with me, like just sort of how solemn that felt. And yeah, it was, I think we left the Capitol the next morning around 5 or 6 a.m. because sleeping on marble floors, it's kind of cold. I remember at one point there was, because there's just plenty of signs around, so oftentimes people also just had cardboard, like, because people will bring cardboard markers to make things. And so the spot that we found had signs and it had a cardboard, just a blank piece of cardboard, which I eventually sort of pulled over and slept on it just to keep some, like, sort of distance between myself and the marble floor. But yeah, it got pretty cold that night, and it was also very, it was surprisingly, I don't know, people just sort of knew when, they had to sort of go around and be like, okay, now it's like, you know, lights off, and like, you know, time to go to bed, everybody be quiet. So it was sort of by about 11:30 or 12, like, people just, you just noticed that the noise level dimmed, like, and it was pretty quiet, actually, around, like, by the time it was a little bit past midnight, it was started to be really very quiet. People were moving about very quietly. And so it wasn't like, because we were a little bit afraid of that when we first showed up around. Because around like 8 o'clock, they were still going very strong, the drum circle, and it was still very loud. So we were a little bit like, okay, this might be going on all night. We have no idea what's going to convince people to quit. But yeah, no, but like, the drum circle stopped by 10, and then by about 11:30 midnight, like, it was just in general, knew that this was, you know, other, even if they weren't ready to, you know, sleep yet, like, other people were about to go to sleep, and so, it was just a very nice general level of respect, and it was really cool, sort of, going through and reading the signs, posters and stuff that people had up. It was, I'm very creative, and they were just very, very different, like, it just, a lot of it reminded me of the Berlin Wall, actually, when I visited, like, and on the eastern side, sort of the way that they would paint these sort of messages and signs on there, like, that's kind of what it felt like to me when walking along it. And, yeah.
Okay. So wait, did you go with other people?
I went with Matt.
Okay.
With cool. The two of us.
Yeah.
And yeah, then I also, when I walked around too, I saw a lot of people. Like, I saw a net there. I think I saw somebody. Who else did I see there? There's somebody else I saw there too. Now I can't remember. I remember seeing a net. Yeah, it was just people there. They had like little knitters circle. I think somewhere on the second and third floor. I don't think she stayed at night. I think she eventually left. But they had a little knitter circle there. So I ran into her there. But yeah, people were just sort of finding all kinds of things and reasons to be in the Capitol. Like, it really was, that really was the mindset that we were going to stay here as long as they were going to let us. And, you know, if they didn't kick us out, we were going to stay here. Yeah.
Okay, so how about right after the Capitol was locked? A few days later, how did that change the kind of stuff you were doing, or did it?
It did. Sort of. Like, it definitely made that, I think, the protests feel somewhat decentralized. Like, whereas before, it was like, you know, you knew where the protests were happening, you knew there was a Capitol, and also, like, you sort of knew where Command Center was, right? 300 Northeast is where TA was staking out and where they were sort of holding everything. And so once we got kicked out, that sort of felt, it did feel very decentralized. It felt like you didn't know where you could go, basically. Or if you want to know information about things that were happening throughout the day or events throughout the day, or in general, what was happening, whether with getting back into the Capitol or anything of that sort, like, you couldn't, it felt harder to kind of get that information. I mean, there was social media, which was fine when everybody was still attached to social media, but if you actually wanted to talk to somebody about it, it was hard to know, like, where you'd go to find someone to talk to about it in person. And I think because of that, I ended up, I usually would be staked out somewhere around the Capitol, like at a coffee shop or somewhere. And I would be, like just constantly online, like reading about various things. And I remember the Isthmus had a very good sort of live feed, just of people's like Twitter posts or, and then there were a few of us that were just sort of reading the news and posting things as we were reading the news, like into this sort of, it was just constantly feed. And that was actually a very useful resource in keeping track of things that were happening. And so, because there would be several things that would happen throughout the day. Like, even though we were locked out of the Capitol, there were still people there that would be outside protesting, asking to let in. I remember walking by the Capitol and seeing all the post-it notes that were on the doors.
Oh, yeah.
And so there were still protests that were happening outside, and then people who would be, you know, started bringing tents and staying outside. And so you would have people there, and also the court case was happening. Like, they were filing a court case and things of that sort to try to get back into the Capitol. The Capitol should stay open. And so you would have, the Isthmus had this very nice feed that, like, there would be people in both areas that was basically constantly twittering about what was going on, or, you know, what the judge had just said, or what the defense had just said, or what the prosecution had just argued. So it was very nice sort of to read that and keep track of everything that was happening on the ground. And that's usually how I sort of kept track. And then eventually, when sort of, I think by about, it was mid-March that we had a spring break that year. I feel like it was mid-March.
Yeah, I did check on that. I think it was like March 12th to 20th or something like that.
Yeah, so. So we had kicked out before that, I think. And I remember going to a general membership meeting shortly before that and sort of discussing what should the plan be after this. But kind of because of spring break, I felt like TA didn't really have a very solid sort of plan about what was going to happen, like how we were going to keep this going past spring break. And sort of after spring break, it did kind of feel like things were, it just had died down a little bit, like the process itself had died down a bit. Like, but I think at that point they had been let back into the Capitol, maybe, or shortly after they had been let back into the Capitol, but not for overnight stays. And so there's still plenty of people there, but it just, the level of the size of the protest was that felt smaller. And I do remember at that point sort of, after that, right about that point, sort of after spring break and beginning of April, that's when I started going to the STUCO meetings more, and then talking to the other stewards about, okay, we're getting, you know, tons of emails and tons of meetings, which one should we actually go to? How do we divide it up so that we can, you know, go to some things and keep each other updated, but not have to, like, you know, spend tons and tons of time in these meetings? Because this is also shortly after the general membership meeting that just went on for hours. That one went on for several hours. And mostly because it was a discussion. This is the one right before spring break. The discussion was about how were we going to keep the momentum going and whether or not we should strike. Like, that was part of the discussion for that membership meeting. And it was clear that because it was such a huge meeting, and in particular for a lot of people who had never been to one of these meetings, so they really weren't aware of how the rules of this meeting, I guess, should go, or just in general, how our union operates. And I mean, I certainly didn't know. This was my first general membership meeting. But, you know, they had handouts explaining what strike actions meant, and they were, you know, I thought the TA co-presidents at that time did a fairly good job at it, sort of explaining, like, you know, what it would mean to strike, like what would have to happen. And yet, like, we still had members sort of go up and be like, I say we strike now. Without understanding that, like, no, just explain, we have to form a strike committee, we have to actually explore our options and things of that sort. It doesn't just sort of happen like that. And we have to actually vote on it. And with everybody being aware that they're at the next meeting that this is being voted on. And so we had a lot of that. And I think that's what dragged out the meeting. And the co-presidents weren't so great about being like, no, that's completely off topic. Like, it's not even allowed. But it was kind of that meeting that went out for so long, and I remember, like, being in the back with Dave still being like, oh my gosh, like, we need to move this along, like, this is like, we are just, this is just dragging on, and we feel like we're not getting anywhere with this. I think at the end, I mean, all we really decided was that we're going to form a strike committee to at least explore the options. And with, yeah, so sort of, that kind of convinced me and Dave Seal and George and Tamana to sort of talk about, okay, like, a couple weeks later to talk about, okay, we have all these meetings, let's discuss what we can actually, like, afford to go to, and how to divide up the work, sort of, between all of us. Which I think sort of continued to the rest of the semester, but we certainly didn't do it again in the fall. Like, in the fall, I've been to a couple GMMs since, but, not, I don't know that they have at all.
Okay, let's see. Yeah, okay, so I guess let's get into the TA stuff maybe a little more. So yeah, I guess maybe let's talk about the Stewards Council next. So what, you know, how did you decide to get involved with that?
It was in the middle of the, like, the height of the protests. Dave Seal was sort of, Dave Seal and I were sort of talking about some stuff and sort of was coming to me about some things, and then at one point he was like, hey, you should join this. I'm on it. And I said, okay, sure. And I think he had already sort of, I mean, the email was sort of like, send it to me, and then CC'd the person who would add me to the Stewards Council and said, hey, you should be on this. I'm already on it. And so I felt like there was no, I couldn't really actually be like, no, that's okay. I sort of got added on. But, I mean, I wanted to be, I don't know. I think I wanted to be more, I had no idea what it meant to be a steward was a thing. And that was why I was hesitant about it. I wanted to be more involved with what the TA was doing, but not, like, I feel like I liked what I was doing, which is that I didn't have a set job or a set sort of position. I got to just sort of pick and choose what it is that fit, what it is that I felt like, you know, I could help out with. And so I was somewhat hesitant about being a steward. And even now, I don't know how I feel about it. Even now, I'm thinking about maybe I should stop being on the steward, being a steward. I do like being on the on their email list. Sort of, I do get information about various things that happen, and it's nice to sort of show up and like help out in that way on the Stewards Council. But I don't feel like it's the right sort of spot for me either. But the way I understand it, nobody else is doing it anyway, and then the other steward seems to be, nobody's sort of come to me and said, you need to do this, and so I'm like, alright, well, right now it's just a title. And I still get to do whatever it is that I feel like fits for the TAA. But yeah, it's, so I didn't really feel like I chose to get involved, or that it was really, Dave Seal was like, you should do this, and I said, okay, sure, why not?
So after you got added, was or you know, to the email list, and sort of became a steward, were there meetings that you started going to, like, right away, like still during the protests, or was, did you start doing more stuff with that later on?
Later on, it was by April. It was sort of, they weren't holding Stewards Council meetings because just of everything,
sure,
during the height of the protest, they were they weren't even trying, which made complete sense. Like, even their GMMs that was supposed to happen, like, oh shit, we have a GMM, even that happened in such a way, like, the very first one that I had actually gone to was actually in 300 Northeast, in the height of the protest, and it was like sort of this, you know, this meeting happened, and it was the shortest meeting GMM I've ever been to, because an hour later they had to say, oh, we have to go to this other meeting with the AFT. And so, like, it had to end. There was no, like, way around it. And that was sort of, like, it felt like a very rushed kind of meeting, mostly just getting information out. And I think because it was just, things were so crazy back then. So certainly the Stewards Council was wasn't even trying to meet. And so it wasn't until sort of after the protests had died down some that they're like, okay, by the way, these stewards council meetings. And that was, I started going to a couple of those. It was, after they were like, oh yeah, we should be doing these things. But I haven't gone at all of this. Sort of the few I went to, I wasn't really sure also what the purpose of it was. And it just, the couple I've gone to, like, it sort of, they kind of became art projects. We were basically making posters and armbands, like in screen printing armbands. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't mind doing that, but I think I felt like my time could be then better spent. I mean, I understood those things that needed to be done, but I feel like my time could have been better spent than sort of doing these art projects. And so sort of after those couple of meetings, I didn't really attend to them anymore. Yeah, I did that spring, I think. Yeah, that spring I also was doing with the TAA their elections when they have to elect for new officers. And I was on the, I don't know if it's a committee, but it was part of the people who were like basically sent out the emails about like, oh, and basically said that, you know, here are the candidates, here's how you vote, and like sending out those sort of emails and then counting the votes. Mm-hmm. And we were doing that spring. But that's about it's more or less what I did with TAA that spring. A couple of steward council meeting and then sort of doing the elections and checking membership and things of that sort. And that was, when the elections part, like, I felt like, okay, that was a worthwhile use of my time. Whereas, I don't know, the art projects, I was through current meetings, just, I don't know. I just wanted us to be talking about something. I wanted us to sort of have some kind of discussion about what things are, why we're doing this, or what's the use of this. Because it felt a little bit senseless to me. When we were doing these art projects, it felt a little bit senseless to me. I was like, well, I don't need to be here doing this. I can be doing this elsewhere. Like, but yeah.
So you mentioned that with Dave Seal and George Brown,
mm-hmm.
and there's someone else you mentioned.
Tamana.
What was the name?
Tamana.
Oh, Tamana. Okay, yeah. So you guys like discussed at some point kind of divvying up like
mm-hmm.
various TAA events or meetings to go
mm-hmm.
to. What I don't know if there's more to talk about there, but is there anything to kind of expand on in terms of how you guys were coordinating?
We sort of coordinated because the SUCO meetings technically happen once a week, technically. Which is quite a bit. And so we sort of, since there were four of us, we said, well, why don't we decide what week of the month we'll take, and then split it up that way. So, you know, somebody from the math department is always represented. So we sort of said, okay, I'll take the first Sunday of the month or the second Sunday. I don't remember what I said. You know, this was already beginning or middle of April, so there weren't that many meetings left. And then the GMM, I think we said, well, you know, we should all try to make the GMMs, which happens once a month, but, you know, if we can't, at least let other people know so that we can at least make sure some one of us is there. And then the goal was that after each meeting, whether it was two or three, to send out a short summary about what had happened. Just no kind of information in general to the other three people. And I remember going to, so for the rest of the semester, I definitely kept up with, you know, went to a couple student meetings, sent out a couple emails, and then I think they got busy, so I never heard from them again. so that was that. But, yeah, and I think come fall, I think nobody really, George, I think, did. George is the only one who sort of kept up with the TAA. I don't know if he's been going to Stuco meetings at all, though. But I certainly haven't heard from George either about, like,
mm-hmm.
things that are happening in TAA.
Well, Okay, so how about sort of overall managing time during the protests? Since you were, you know, spending so much time at the Capitol, how did you juggle, you know, different things that were going on?
I lost a lot of time at the Capitol. Like, a good chunk of my semester, I remember sort of talking to a friend, like, the beginning of April, and being like, yeah, can't believe it's April. Like, the semester has been, like, it's felt like, it really did feel like it was just a protest for most of it. And there was very little of that semester that I actually remember, other than the protests. So yeah, I lost a lot of time at the Capitol. And I mean, not just at the Capitol itself necessarily, but like, I was just following, like, just spent a lot more time reading the news and things of that sort, like knowing what was going on and what the next steps were, what we were planning to do about this, how the recalls were gonna happen and things of that sort. And so it was, I think just for the, and really the height of the protests, just a lot of things got put on hold. A lot of things I just didn't do. I mean, I still went and taught, and, you know, the things I had to do with teaching, I did. But in general, everything else kind of got dropped. It wasn't until maybe mid-March that I got picked back up, that I sort of said, okay, now I do need to. I can't just have an entire semester where it's just this. So yeah, it was, I did just lose a lot of time to it. Pretty much the only commitment that I sort of maintained was teaching, because I had to keep teaching. Like, there was no way around that. But yeah, I mean, it was really 2 to 3 weeks before we were kicked out, and so those were the 2 or 3 weeks in which just, like, I would show up to teach, but, you know, grading that I had to do and things that sort. And it was actually easier for me, probably, in the sense that that was not my first semester teaching this class. Like, I sort of taught this class for a couple semesters, and so I had a lot of my prep work already done. If it had been my first semester teaching this class, it would have been a lot harder to manage time. But because I had a lot of my prep work done, you know, I was much easier to sort of just show up and teach and not have to spend a lot of time prepping. But during the sort of height of the protest, the two and a half weeks, I forget how long that we were actually staking at the Capitol, like, no grading got done. Like, nothing, none of my own research got done, like, nothing got done. It really was just spending time at the protest itself. It wasn't until sort of after that that I was like, okay, I do have to sort of do some things about this teaching. And then after spring break, I was like, okay, you know, I need to now actually devote large chunks of time to my research that I should have been doing the last 4 weeks. It wasn't, and then also for me too, right around beginning of April, mid-April, my grandma passed away. And so also around that time, I just didn't pay any more attention to any of these protests, sort of right after that. Like, right when I found out, and then until I went home for the funeral and everything, I just, that was where my level of involvement dropped off significantly.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I was dealing with other stuff. Yeah.
Okay, so how about any other activities since the protests, in terms of, I mean, right, you already talked about doing stuff with Stucco and the TAA officer elections. Is there any other stuff that you've done since the protests?
No, not really. No, voting. A couple of general membership meetings, especially the one with talking about who to endorse for the upcoming recall to governor. Signing recall petitions. Other than that, No, I haven't really done anything else sort of political or involving with the TAA. There was the protest not that long ago in March, beginning of March, where it was the anniversary of them having passed this,
right.
this part of the bill. And I showed up for that protest and walked around, and also went into the Capitol. That was the first time I've been in the Capitol since the whole protest and getting kicked out. And it was, I have forgotten sort of like what that Capitol felt like. And it's also like very, I remember you commenting during the middle of the protest about like how easy it was to still get turned around in the Capitol, like trying to find 300 Northeast was an ordeal. And then I'm like, oh, you know, I kind of figured it out. But sort of, you know, a year later, I still turned around. Like I was like walking around third floor trying to find 300 Northeast, and I didn't remember it was 300. But I didn't remember it was Northeast. I'm like, was it like this hallway? It was much easier to recognize during the protest when they had like food and things, like all these people outside. But yeah, like when all that changed and all the signs came down and everything, like it's sort of back to the Capitol. I had to walk around a little bit and be like, I think it was here. Like this hallway looks familiar. But it was still, like, the Capitol definitely now feels very, as a building, definitely feels very different to me now. Sort of before, I would walk right through it, and it was a nice building, it was pretty, I liked exploring. But now it just has so much more meaning when I walk through it. Like, just, like, even the simple thing that I would go through and I'd, like, touch the walls, I'm like, yeah, this is where the signs were. And going up to, where people were lined up outside testifying, and like just recalling that, and you recognize sort of all the senators' names and the ones who had gotten recalled and things of that, or who we were trying to recall, and just remembering kind of the signs on the doors, the post-its, it just felt, and where we sort of camped out, where people were camped out, and how each sort of little nook and cranny, like recalling how all those felt and seemed during the protest, it held a lot more sentiment and memories than before, where it was just a pretty building.
Okay, so maybe backing up a little bit. Are there any, do you have any particular memories about, some of the general membership meetings that you went to during, let's say, mainly focus on, like, during the protests or shortly after? Any memories from those that kind of stand out?
I remember the one that was happening in 300 Northeast, and that one was very, like I said, that was a very short GMN, surprisingly short, and I kind of thought that was my first one, I kind of thought that was how they were all going to go. That one was a lot about getting information out, about like, you know, here's what's happening, here's what we're doing, you know, here's what we're trying to do, and that was sort of still, it was not a very organized meeting, but I remember feeling like that was a very productive meeting because I felt like I got a lot of information out of it. And then it dispersed. And then the one that happened right before the spring break, that one, I just remember that one being very, very long, and at the end of which it became clear that nobody really understood in the meeting hall itself, like what, like sort of what we were doing. Like, throughout the meeting, it seemed like people got lost, like what we were trying to do, what was the motion that we were trying to vote on or not vote on. It was a very big meeting, and it was very clear that this was the biggest meeting that they've sort of ever had. And I remember that there was a sense that I got from some of the officers that they weren't quite sure about. Like, as a union, I feel like we're very disorganized in the way that we don't really know that much about our own bargaining unit. Sort of people within our bargaining unit really don't quite understand what it is life is like for other grad students and other departments. I remember there was somebody sort of suggesting that we should, basically that we should have another teach out. Like have another teach out like tomorrow or, you know, next week or something. And I remember I was staying next to Regina at the time, and Regina was very upset about this because she was teaching 5 days a week. And even when I heard this, I'm like, I can't manage another teach out. Like, I only, you know, it only affected me one day, but that one day was then became a significant thing on my time. Like, I can't manage another teach out. And certainly my students were completely unhappy with it to begin with. And they didn't want to do it to my students again. And Regina was teaching, you know, 4 or 5 days a week. She was like, I've already, like, you know, she's already missing much more than I have, like, two or three days now. And she's like, you know, I can't do another teach out. Like, that's not going to happen. And it was clear that the person who had sort of suggested it hadn't been affected by teach out, either because they weren't teaching or because every single time that we had, you know, call for one, it didn't actually conflict with them. So it did, because he was just very flippant about it. Like, it was in sort of a serious decision. And it was those kind of discussions, that was kind of back and forth, that sort of, I remember being like, I feel like we don't really understand each other at all. Like, because nobody shows up to these general membership meetings. We don't actually hear that varying opinions of our bargaining unit. Like, sort of the same sorts of people that show up and not actually what a bargaining unit looks like, which is very different, and people with very different jobs, including project assistants and research assistants. And for them, having a teach out is much easier to deal with than people who actually have teaching appointments. And I remember thinking that there was something about it, because it was so democratic. It's a very democratic union. Our union is very democratic. It's, you know, we vote on everything. That there was some amount of it that I felt like, I remember feeling like, I wish there was more organization. There's a lot to be said about it being so democratic, which is great, but I felt like because the protests was so huge, the protests themselves was so huge, and TEA, the union itself, really was kind of, we were really kind of the ones that sort of started it, that kind of led it, that I think we wanted to see more leadership in general. And there was a sense that I got that the majority of people who had shown up at this general membership meeting kind of was showed up because we were looking for direction, for what should we be doing next, what is our next step. And I think the TA and, you know, the officers and the exec board, that what they normally do is, right, I mean, this is great in normal sort of conditions, is that they said, you guys are the union, you guys decide what as together, like, what we should do next, like, what our next step should be. Which is great in normal conditions. In normal conditions, when we're actually union, when our, you know, we are actually certified and things of that sort, that's great to be able to sort of show up and say, here's what I want my union to do, and then we get to vote on it democratically. But during the protests, really, I felt like the majority of people who showed up to this general membership meeting were instead looking for more directions, more sort of, so the TA says, here's our plan of action, here is what we would like you guys to do next. Because we were very, I think the general feeling was just that we were very excited is not quite the right word, energized is a better word. We were very energized and, you know, wanted to keep the protests going, we wanted some change to happen. And that general meeting, I think the bill had already passed, and it was sort of like, and we wanted to know, like, what should the next step be? What should we do in the next step? How do we, you know, how do we push for this? How do we gain things back? Mm-hmm. But instead, I think that meaning the e-board was more like, well, let's decide as a union with you. I think I dragged it out because I don't think any of us sort of came to that meeting thinking that, oh, we should come up with a plan of action, instead of thinking that we would, like, know what that plan of action is going to be.
How about, I don't know, just other general strong memories from during the protests? You know, particular conversations you had stand out, or, I don't know, just other general things that stand out in your mind?
I remember, well, there are a few things, I guess. There was a lot about the protest that sort of was difficult to sort of manage. I mean, I sort of understood how difficult it was to manage such a large group of people. Like, it was, there was a lot of effort to keep things peaceful and for fights to not break out and things of that sort. But it really just takes one instigator and then all hell breaks out. Like, it's, and I remember sort of Mason visited at some point during that time, and then sort of he was going around like just yelling things, like, because he thought it was fun, you know. And I understand it's enjoyable because the whole like protest was just crazy, and I understand that was, you know, that was a very sort of exciting thing to be in the middle of. But for me as well, I was just because we were also presenting an image to everybody else, and that as public union employees, like public employees, we wanted the public on our side, basically. We wanted people who, you know, maybe didn't have an opinion to be on our side. And so I was very sensitive to him possibly offending people. I don't think he intended to, but just sort of anything that might have come across in that way, I was very sensitive to it. Because I felt like we had already been pushing our limits with staking out the Capitol and sort of staying in there and not leaving, I think was already turning a lot of people off. And also with some of the teachers calling in sick, like mass majorities of teachers calling sick and schools having closed. I think we were already starting to turn people off. We were already sort of pushing those limits. And so I was pretty sensitive to when, you know, just people were just being obnoxious in their way, or, you know, with things that, saying things that might come off as obnoxious to other people, that I was particularly sensitive to that. And that it was hard to sort of just keep, I don't know, I feel like it was hard at times too to make sure that people understood why we were doing this and whether or not it might be appropriate for them to say things. Like, there at one point during the protests, I get a phone call from Dave Seal being like, "Hey, have you read these emails?" I'm like, "I don't know what you're talking about, because I have not been reading the emails. I've been in the Capitol, like, actually protesting." So I'm like, "I don't know what you're talking about." So he tells me this. I'm like, you know, he tries to explain to me over the phone, and it is really loud in the Capitol, so I can barely hear him. I kind of get the sense that, okay, something had happened where somebody had been sending out this email to the department, and Joe had said something, and then, you know, he's like, "I don't know what to do about this." And I'm like, "Well, do you want me to talk to her?" Like, she's like, "Well," he's like, "well, you should be careful if you talk to her, because she's just gonna, like, be careful because she might, you know, just repeat what you said to the entire department," kind of thing. I'm like, "Okay, all right, well, I'm not sure what you want me to do here," right? Like, I'm like, I can barely hear you. I barely understand the situation. I'm not sure what you want me to do here. And then eventually I did read the actual emails. Eventually I finally sat back down and I actually read through just a long chain of emails and understanding what was happening. And it was, I understood, like, why Dave was concerned. And it was the same sort of thing where just this thing that could have been small and maybe dealt with easily just suddenly got blown out very quickly. Like, this was about the teach out, I think, too. Because Joe was upset about the fact that one of the TA members had sort of said, I guess at the meeting when they were talking about doing the teach out, the general feeling that she got from it was that, you know, we would be fine. That, you know, it was a strike action, but that we would be fine. That, you know, Biddy Martin was gonna protect us, basically. That nothing would actually happen to us. So she thought, like, so she was like, okay, we're, you know, that's no problem. And then sort of later, maybe after the meeting, she got like she in corresponding with somebody else from TAA, with Adrian. Adrian kind of said, well, you know, you should understand that it is still in legal action. It's still something that, you know, we can't actually get anybody to, like, we can't say that somebody's actually endorsed that. I don't think that's something you should count on, but, you know, if you send an email to your department, yeah, here's the language that I used, and sort of sent her a copy of the email. And then Joe sort of forwards that to the entire department. You know, one with her comments about it being like, you know, I wish TA had been more clear about this and just basically complaining about it. But, like, it was those kind of things that Dave, I think, was concerned about because it started to set a very negative tone. And not only a negative tone, but I think it made the rest of us have a difficult time with the teach-out. Because I think some of us who, you know, because in general, we handle our own teaching abilities, right? We have a supervisor we report to, but in general, we're pretty good about handling our teaching ability, like, responsibilities. Like, things that we need to do, we get done. If we need to, you know that we're not supposed to cancel class if we don't have to, but we can always let students go early. Like, those kind of things, we know what we're allowed and not allowed to do. And so it was sort of when Joe started saying this out, being like, and demanding that the department sort of support us, I think suddenly became an issue, because I think Dave was like, I feel like we're not just, now we're also antagonizing a lot of our department, which didn't seem to be necessary. Like, we could have handled this. Like, we could have participated in teach out as we seem appropriate. We could have discussed with our lecturers, you know, saying that this is what we want to do. And, you know, and because we had gotten the general sense that most of the professors in our department were quite supportive of what we were doing out there, and understood that it was an important issue to us. And maybe Mark Castillo, who sort of was, you know, very much for the budget bill, had sent out a couple of emails saying so, even right before the protest, was like, okay, guys, make sure you all have a buddy, drink plenty of fluids, like, was, you know, understood that this was an important thing for us, that even if he didn't agree with it, he understood that it was an important thing for us as grad students and as TAs. And so I feel like both Dave and I felt like we, most of the department was on our side, that we could have easily worked this out with our lecture, but sort of now often we were sort of antagonizing people who would be our supporters.
Mm-hmm.
And so I totally understood what Dave was sort of concerned about. But it was just, like, that sort of became very clear throughout the protest that it really only, like, could be like all of us have very good intentions about what should happen and trying to gain as many supporters as we can, trying to garner as much support as we can. And all it takes is a couple people that sort of, you know, take things a little bit too far, or just a couple of skaters who are not, you know, think it's fun or think it's great, or like, you know, yay, we get to camp out of the Capitol kind of thing, and then for it to just really be hard to manage. And something I really remember too about the protest was just the Capitol Police. I feel like people have a lot of criticism for them. The Capitol Police, the Madison Police Department, I feel like in general were very much on our side. They had jobs to do. They were still, you know, they still had jobs to do. But in general, things could have gone a lot worse. Like, many other sort of protests on that scale end up being, you know, just not nearly as peaceful as I think we had it. And I think that's really all to the credit of the protesters, as well as to the Madison Police Department and the Capitol Police. I think they were very good about, because it's so quick for things, these things sort of escalate very quickly. I think they were very good instead about recognizing, you know, when things might start to slowly get out of hand because a couple people that are just instigating, that they're much better about keeping it to just those people, like, and removing those people from it, instead of sort of viewing all of us, the entire group of protesters, as antagonists.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I think that it was the fact that we just in general, the protesters had a good relationship with the Madison Police Department and the Capitol Police, that it stayed as peaceful as it did.
Okay, so how about any you know, future plans? It sounded like you alluded to doing a little more of something in the math department, but what about that kind of stuff?
Yeah, probably just couple things here and there. Maybe trying to organize a little bit more in the department. Just came up with a sign up for our memberships. And probably, if I'm here in June, which I probably will be, going to phone bank, just calling people to get out the actual vote for the actual recall. Just hoping to come out and vote. This is for, I think, the AFT, the AFT is doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Just volunteering with them. And yeah, that's about it. It's sort of what I plan. So sort of here and there, but not nothing more extensive than that, I guess. Because I think, in general, I feel like a research source such that, focusing on the recall. And as a union, we're still operating. We're operating fine. But there isn't a whole lot we can do. Like, we can't actually bargain. We're not recertified. I mean, there's a lot of it that's just waiting to see what happens with Act 10. They had turned over one of the judges, I forget his name, had turned over part of Act 10, so that, but we were still, those, because we didn't seek to certify, basically, and because we didn't seek to certify, we're still not a certified union. But I guess if we had been seeking to certify, we would be fine, we would actually automatically be recertified. I'm not sure, it's not clear what his actual injunction is, but basically what he was blocking was the recertification process. And Regina told me a couple weeks ago that, actually this might have been back in March, that even the unions, particularly small unions, because the recertification process was that you had to have everybody, like 50% of your bargaining unit agree to be a part of this union or certify this union, which was ridiculous. Ridiculous things. But she was, and so TA decided not to recertify, not to bother trying. Also because TA has to do this by paper ballots because our constitution apparently never changed, or our bylaws, or whatever. For a reason, everything can be a paper ballot. And so we chose not to recertify, but the union was saying how there were some other small unions that did choose to recertify and managed to get recertified. Like, they managed to get their bargaining, like, more than half of their bargaining units agree to certify the union. And for them, she's saying that, but even for them, they've been having trouble getting the government to actually bargain with them, to actually sit across the bargaining table with them. So that even though they've sort of gone through that process, even just bargaining about wages, even though they've gone through that sort of process, and remember during the protests had been promised all along that, oh no, you can still bargain over wages, you can still do this. Like, here were these unions who had actually gone through the process, gone recertified, and can't get them to sit down with them. And so she was saying that, yeah, it's even with this Act 10, like, who knows what would actually happen. It's very clear that this administration is just not at all actually interested in us as unions. I think really just like us gone altogether. And so as much as during the protest they said that, oh, this wasn't about union busting, like, no, it really was, because even these unions who did everything that you asked for, they're still not sitting down with them and actually negotiating anything. And so it does feel, whatever happens actually with Act 10 in the courts and stuff feels a little bit moot, I think, because we are sort of just waiting and seeing what happens with that, and then instead of focusing more of our attention on the recall, because it's really about now a change in the administration. Yeah, Regina's been doing a lot more with that. I think she's, because AFT has actually endorsed Falk, and so she's been doing more with trying to promote Falk's sort of numbers, I guess, for voting. So sort of when she asked me to volunteer, I think I make it clear, but like, well, I don't know who I'm voting for, because I wouldn't feel comfortable calling people and asking them to vote for Falk, but if you want to tell us who to come out and vote, I can do that. Like, that's fine. Which is partly why I'm like, well, can we wait till after the primary, and then I will feel more comfortable with telling people to vote for, who, you know, suggesting who they should vote for, other than prior to the primary, when I don't even know yet.
Right. Okay, so is there, I guess before we wrap up, any other thoughts you want to add for today?
No, I don't think so. Okay. Which covers it, yeah.
Cool.